Welcome to This Week in FX PhD, your weekly wrap-up and behind the scenes at fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to This Week at FX PhD. John Montgomery with you, joined as always by Mike. Welcome to the July 2015 term, my friend.
Yes. We had a couple of missed, I guess, things, didn't we? Like end of last term in terms of the recording. And actually, for very good reasons, but I can't remember what any of them were. But suffice it to say...
Holiday. I know what one was. Holiday.
Okay. But suffice it to say, we are sorry, but yeah. we are back. And yes, we, as you know, try to do this every week during term time as just a way to get you kind of what's going on behind the scenes and what's happening at PhD. And this one at the beginning of term is one of our all-time favourites ones, obviously four times a year, because we get to discuss the new courses and chat about all the stuff that we've been excitedly kind of working towards for what seems like forever. But
it's all right. It's, yeah. There needs to be a better analogy than giving birth, because that to me diminishes the obviously the process of giving birth. But there's got to be a.
Oh, I think you say diminishes the term, and I say
no.
Hang on a second.
But you know what I mean? It's like that's really inappropriate. What we're doing is nowhere related to that. But it's a large involvement that takes, as you say, a long time, a heck of a lot of work, and we're always really excited to announce and reveal it because. You know, much of what we do is actually trying to bring things that all of you suggest as part of the EPIC course suggestion thread, as well as emails that we get, things like that. So it's just a lot of fun and really a great opportunity just to share. It's fun for us.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that there are occasions, this term is one of them, where, you know, there are courses that we can't tell you about that we almost had that we were working hard on. So if you've posted something in the thread and you're a member of FX PhD and you're saying, well, I said that and they said and it sounded like they were keen and I didn't see it, it's literally sometimes that we got, you know, a whole lot of communications going and found, in this case, I'm thinking one example, we found three people that were really keen to do it after SIGGRAPH. Like, we're really keen, but we've got really slammed with SIGGRAPH.
It might come across as us being cagey or whatever, or elusive, you know, or evasive, I guess is the right word, of suggestions. But that's why we don't commit all the time, right, to suggestions.
There's exactly the same reason we don't leak way ahead, because the theory would be, you know, well, why don't you just tell us what's coming? And it's like, yeah, well, until we can absolutely confirm it. We don't want to get people, because, you know, it seems like a bit of a ripoff. That being said, what we also do is try and have more than enough courses going into the period so that if something does move back a term, we don't... So, in fact, I guess I'm being slightly disingenuous, because if they'd all confirmed, we'd have had too many courses this term and we would have had to push one back ourselves. So we have some really, really good courses this term, cracking. And as you probably noticed in the O-Week video, we've tried to sort of split them a bit more along the lines of commercials and features, as opposed to maybe being more specific to, say, a Nuke or a Mayer kind of handle on them. Now, of course, some courses are focused on things like Nuke, Mayer, or for that matter, 3D Equalizer, but that is... By the by, we still think that it's really important to be talking about the craft and the skills of getting the job done in a particular work environment than it is to be talking about, you know, the specifics of this button on Flame does this. And I think you'd agree, John, that that's probably been quite a long way, from where we started. Much more focused on products way back in the day, but it's certainly what people seem to respond to these days.
Yeah, you can certainly say that, because again, we very much react to what you guys say and these ideas of doing projects that potentially even span multiple applications within the same course and versus being very specific to the application. Those are the ones you guys have really reacted to in the past, and I don't know. I think. Especially, you know, that's why we also broke that, Mike, into the features versus commercials things, because a lot of the times from a feature standpoint, you are very much concentrating on a core task or a core application potentially in that because of specialization. Whereas if you're working, say, in a broader area like commercials, you are probably touching more things in that job and more applications and more creative tasks.
True. If you're a massive specialist, you're a massive specialist. But that being said... I think the point's still valid. It's as much as we like to make sure people have the skills to know which buttons to press, You know, probably most of our courses aim beyond that in the fact that most of our courses are, you know, 200, 300, or we have obviously some 100. But anyway, enough of the preamble. Let's get into what's hot this term.
Where do you want to start?
I think we should start at the beginning. Let's start with our 100-level courses and work our way up. And one of the reasons I wanted to do that is I wanted to welcome back Jeff Huser, our good friend who is joining us for a 100-level course in commercials finishing. And I think this is something that, you know, we always need to keep an eye on, which is people joining us that are newer and aren't, you know, returning members and want to have some more 100-level courses. So we do try and balance those out. And Jeff has got decades of experience in the commercials realm and, you know, obviously incredibly well suited to discuss this. John, do you want to explain how that works? Because we've got it listed as the primary software as Flame, but it's not really a Flame course per se.
Yeah, that's very true. This is very much, in fact, about using multiple bits of software, from Flame to Hero to Nuke Studio, things like that. But also not just, as you say, not just about the software, but about the whole process. And fundamentally about this course is actually, I don't know anyone who's been doing commercial finishing longer than Jeff Huser. As I like to say, he's forgotten more than I've learned over the years, I think. And the idea behind the course is for him to actually share his experiences doing commercial finishing for many years and provide insight into what that job entails, how you can prepare yourself for the job, the kind of skill set that you need, and the actual process and workflow of doing that as well. And because of the fact that he actually uses many different applications as part of the job, this is going to be very application agnostic. Starting from the beginning of the process, utilizing basically going through the bidding process, doing tests, doing the conform, doing retouch. He's just going to touch a ton of different applications as part of the course and really help kind of demystify what it takes to be a commercial finisher. Because, Mike, as you know, the fact is, and still generally the case, that it's still quite a specialized job because of the wide variety of skills that you need to do that. And we're not just talking software skills or artistic skills. We're talking, political skills, right? Almost working with clients, yep. Balancing kind of disparate needs. A good example when you're working on a commercial is you might have several people with conflicting ideas of what should be done in finishing. I know that's hard to believe, but just going to talk about this. And that varies from having a director who wants one thing to an ad agency creative who wants another to potentially a very high level ad agency account exec who wants to do something very specific as well. So again, it runs from a wide variety of skills, potentially a wide variety of software, and those interpersonal relationships as well.
And this is actually going to include how to sell yourself into that market. So if you want to explore this in terms of, well, I'd like to be in commercials and do that kind of work. In fact, you'll find Class 10 actually is focused on getting yourself into a company doing this kind of work, right down to your demo reel. Yeah, obviously Jeff will be using Flame and stuff like that. As you said, he'll also be using Hero. But things like EDL, conforming and matching to offlines and just, as you say, working with people and going on set in a commercials environment where it's probably just a one-day thing or a smaller, obviously, shoot than a feature film. All of that stuff is tied up in this 100-level course. And as you said, he's been teaching for us before, but he's also been doing commercials work across both coasts. And that includes Super Bowl work, but stuff from New York, Chicago, and for many years now in LA. So yeah, great to have Jeff back. Plus, yeah, we really like Jeff. He's a heck of a nice guy.
Exactly. So it's going to surely be a lot of fun.
Okay, So what else have we got in our kind of 100-level...
I'll toss it to you since Jeff's here in L.A. and I've been working with him, as have you, but since he's very close by, I've been working with him a lot. About how about your friend Jeff Tobin, who I'm personally really excited to have back because, again, like Jeff, you want to talk crazy, amazing experience and skill set with Massive? Jeff is the guy.
Yeah, I first started working with Jeff years ago on side effects software. It was Prisms, I think. But anyway, at some point, Jeff happily left the company that I was at to go to be a TD at Weta Digital. And he went at a point where all of the staff at Weta could stand in the lobby at Manuka main office, which, to give you an idea, is kind of like a normal reception area that, you know, would have like maybe two small couches. That's how small Weta was when he went there. And he has been on Massive since 2000. So we're literally talking 15 years of being on Massive. He's one of the most skilled Massive artists in the world. Because Massive, of course, started at Weta, split out to a separate company. When Jeff taught a Massive course for us before, we were talking to the people at Massive about doing this. And they were going, yeah, well, it's all very well and good. And we hadn't explained Jeff. It was just an early chat, having coffee. And it was like the first few five minutes. And you could tell that that was like something kind of bothering them. And they said, look, the thing is, it's all very well that you want to teach a Massive course, but where are you going to find someone really skilled? With this kind of sigh. And I went, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't tell you. Jeff Tobin's a really good friend and he's teaching it. And they went, oh my God, Jeff's teaching it? It was like their faces just lit up. They were like, it was like, how on earth did you get Jeff Tobin to teach this? And we were like, oh yeah, no, he's great. So think of anything that Weta's done in the last 15 years, from Lord of the Rings to King Kong, iRobot, Avatar, Planet of the Apes films, the Hobbit trilogies. If there's a crowd and there's a Massive bit, Jeff's in there like Flynn. And so, yeah, it's easy to say that Jeff is fairly qualified to teach a 100-level introduction to Massive. Now, the thing about this Massive course is that it is very similar in content to the original introductory course he did way back in the day. But, of course, for the new version of the software, version 7, and that's important. We're going to have the software on VPN, so if you've not got Massive software, it's easy to do it. And what Jeff's doing, which I think is really great, is letting you build up the it's like a classic piece that gets you the good understanding of what you're going to want to use Massive for, which is crowds moving around and traffic. And that is a shot that you can see if you look at the O-Week video. And in understanding that with the agents, and you'll understand the two primary uses of Massive, to be honest, which is crowds and traffic. And the stuff in Massive is quite advanced. Obviously, it goes quite far, and you can get those agents being very complex. But as an understanding at a base level, this will get you up and running to a point that you can really seriously use the product in production. And as I say, with it being on VPN, you can test drive it if you don't have it in your facility. And Jeff is really clear, really articulate, and a heck of a nice guy. And so I think you guys will really enjoy that if you're not familiar with Massive. So it should be good.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because he really does have a great way, even for someone like me who doesn't really know, didn't I remember from the first time he did the course, which was, I just checked, back in January 2009. Really approachable skill set and a great, really great teaching style, I guess you could say. So
yeah, he sure does, as you say, know his stuff.
Yes, for certain.
And we love getting people that are very serious from production to do this sort of stuff. Obviously, Jeff is still at Weta and still doing stuff. He's just between projects. And so we're lucky enough to score him for this. But that's indicative of what we generally like to do with our profs from around the world, which is get people in from production that are got one reason or another an opportunity to teach for us. They're keen to do it, and we're keen to have them. Do you want to now jump over to our VR stuff, John? Because we had a 100-level VR course, which is being repeated this term. And I was obviously involved in that, as were you. And we have a 200-level course that actually builds on that, that is very much coming. I mean, I'd like to help, but it's definitely coming from your quarter.
Yeah. So as you all learned, those of you who took the Virtual Reality 101 course, the Virtual Reality Bootcamp course, which is running again this term, by the way, in case you missed that, it's an incredibly broad scope of type of work that's being done in virtual reality. Some of it from more simple productions to more complex, obviously, as you start doing stereo and integrated 3D and things like using Unreal and things like the Unity to actually present information within, say, a phone or mobile phone browser. But in talking to people here in Los Angeles who are doing work right now, one of the issues in finding people to do the work is finding artists who kind of understand some of the root principles and the root challenges of creating VR. And what they're finding is they're finding that they're having to spend a tremendous amount of time getting people up to speed right from the scratch. So they're, instead of just simply hitting the ground running and working on the job, they spend an inordinate amount of time getting them trained up in these core skills. So to that end, we're partnering with Alex Henning, who's a visual effects supervisor with Magnopus, of course, along with Ben Grossman there, as well as Scott Squires, of course, who has an incredible amount of experience over the years. And our first production-based VR course, one of many, which will be coming over the following terms. But what this one's going to do is actually focus on one aspect of virtual reality production. That's creating monoscopic spherical VR. In other words, something that you could maybe watch not just with a headset on your mobile phone or on the upcoming Oculus Rift when it comes out, but simply something such as one of the surfaces online, such as YouTube 360 video or something like that. And the reason we're doing that is because it's, again, really important to understand those core principles. And Alex is a big, big, big believer of this, that the ideas and challenges that you run into in creating this monoscopic live-action VR, those principles translate to the next step, which could be stereoscopic live-action VR or stereoscopic live-action with integrated CG, or that next step that we talk about, live-action real-time rendering of 3D. So we're starting with the building blocks, and what we're going to do is go do a couple shots. We're going to start out first talking a little bit about the business and how to set yourself up to do production in VR. Dive into the creative for our shoot, because like all things and all visual effects things like that we like to do in visual effects, you start with the creative, and that drives the process of how you shoot it and what you do in post. Then we're going to dive into actually doing the shoot. We're going to use several different rigs so you can get your feet wet doing that. Last term we did one with the Freedom 360 rig utilizing GoPros. We're going to do another one shot this term with 360 rig and GoPros, but do the finishing in Nuke as opposed to an off-the-shelf bit of hardware. We're also going to show very approachable techniques to create VR yourself. You don't necessarily, depending upon the creative content, have to shoot with a 3D rig that shoots 360 all at the same time. You can do multi-pass type techniques, again, depending upon the creative. So that's what we're going to do throughout the process. So start out with the shoot prep, go through the middle courses and actually work through the post-production. Again, it's going to be focused on utilizing, doing compositing within Nuke. We're going to add effects. We're going to add some CG renders. And then we're going to take it and do audio and distribution in the end. So you get a full, really solid base understanding of this live-action VR workflow. And again, sensible building blocks to a full curriculum that we're going to be coming up with in the next several terms here at FX PhD.
Yeah, really, really important to understand how much this is evolving.
Just even Mike, from the time that we started doing the virtual reality bootcamp course, there have already been new developments coming out. I mean, Jaunt has at least shown renders of their new camera.
Yep.
At this point, so it's a rapidly changing field, and we're going to keep on top of it.
So one of the things that that I think makes like underlines is the value of the forums at PhD, because in these courses that we're talking about, which are all the new courses, the professors are available in the forums to answer questions. And this is really key because things are evolving and changing. There are a whole bunch of questions that come up. If you're just downloading a video that may be out of date, you don't know, and you can't talk to the professor, you kind of like left in a bit of a void. But inside the PhD model, where it's coming out as it goes along, and you can ask people questions and get clarification on stuff as stuff is changing, and quite frankly, could change radically even in the 3 months that this is running, you know, you're going to get those updates. So it could be that you saw something in class one, and then something comes and you go, hang on, does that seem right? We can just explain that and work to it. So that's a fundamental reason why we tend to do the stuff the way that we do it. Okay, so now moving back to our world of 200 level courses, because those are the new 100 level courses, and of course there's more stuff in the vault which you can have for download or courses that are being repeated, as we've already said. We have a series of courses that are actually interconnecting, in the sense that we've had things that have been started in one term and then connected through to another term. Because one of the things we want to do is get some really high quality material done at kind of a very professional level. And it's sometimes hard to do all that inside a single term without skipping and it making it looking like a cooking show. And by a cooking show, I mean, well, here's one I prepared earlier. It's like, wait a second, you just skipped like a whole ton of work and I can't possibly keep up with that. So while it's good to watch, I can't produce that myself. So we have, John, a couple of courses that fall into this category. I guess the most obvious one is the Tornado Destruction Part 2, which Ludo does, which is building in Maya on what was done, of course, in the Destruction Part 1.
Yeah, there's going to be, many apps utilized as part of this course. Maya certainly being one of them, Houdini as well. And as you can see with the preview image on the site as well as the preview video, you can see kind of where we ended up with some of the initial destruction effects and so forth within Houdini. And we're going to just basically pick it up right where that previous course left off. With look development and lighting, and Charles is going to be doing that. Charles has just been great in his classes he's done as part of this course. And then basically once he gets that done, they'll do a kind of a rough pass of compositing, which is a sensible way to go to take a look at thing and then kind of final the lighting as well. Ludo comes in, actually starts working on the actual matte painting to kind of clean up that scene that we're looking at. If you look at the video, there's a nice, clean, sunny scene of a nice location in Mexico that he obviously needs to feel a bit darker and stormier, as well as add a small town as part of that. He's going to spend a couple times working the matte painting, and then maybe four or even five classes based upon compositing as part of the term to actually put it all together. So again, the idea of this course that was actually submitted by one of our members several terms ago is to actually take an entire scene, develop it from start to finish. And if you missed that Tornado Destruction Part 1 course, that is, of course, running this term as well. So you can catch those two courses back-to-back to get the full package. And again, Ludo's background and all the artists' background who are working on this, really high-end visual effects, all of them actually work at DNEG in London along with Ludo. So we're really great to have those guys teaching with us this term.
Yeah, now We picked up on some enthusiasm amongst PhD members over the Mad Max film, and we have a lot of access to talk to people. In fact, we've got Andrew Jackson, the VFX supervisor from Mad Max, in our series on Background Fundamentals. So if you know, Background Fundamentals is the free course you get each term that just is included to give you an insight into what's going on in the industry. This term we're focusing on what it is to be a VFX supervisor, and Andrew's kicking that off. Class one is sitting down with Andrew, not discussing the film Mad Max, you understand, but discussing his lessons from working on multiple feature films and how he approaches things. And in Andrew's case, he came to VFX from SFX. In other words, he's a mechanical guy before he was a digital guy. Just a fascinating guy. I've known Andrew for years, worked with him, and love him to death, great guy. But he makes for such an interesting interview. I have to confess, it is a little long, the first class. It's more like 50 minutes. We had it at an hour and a half, and I was like, okay, I hate to do this, but guys, we're just going to have to cut and cut and cut, because he and I just had a ball chatting. But we're going to be talking to VFX advisors from around the world, from Weta, from ILM, from just anywhere and everywhere that is focused. And we're not just talking to VFX soups per se. We're going to be talking to people like Rob Coleman from Animal Logic, in animation, and some animation supervisors as well. Okay, that's all coming up. But as part of this kind of Mad Max thing, we just so loved the look of it that a couple of the professors and John and I were discussing that maybe we should try some shots that are of the homage of kind of the ilk, but certainly not from the film, but, you know, of the kind of vibe of the film. And so we've made up some assets, and one of those is going to be in one of the courses. The other one is a digital matte painting. So picking up on what you were just discussing with Ludo, he's also doing another course this term, which is digital matte painting Desert Apocalypse. And the idea here is to, you know, have some of those kind of environment stuff that you might be using for something like a Mad Max-y, apocalypse-y type thing with you know, wrecked cars and stuff in a kind of a desert scene and stuff. It's going to be using nuke projection, a bunch of obviously you know, general kind of layout stuff. It's more than a matte painting. It's more of a digital environment. I think digital matte painting is accurate, but really, if you aren't so familiar with this area, it's far from a Photoshop kind of world where you might have thought of a traditional kind of 2D matte painting. This is very much a digital environment, isn't it, John?
Yeah, it certainly is. And it's going to be using, starting out with a track. It's a moving tracking scene, which you can actually check out in the O-Week video. It's actually going to be kind of difficult because it's going to require several setups in the way it's going to be approached to actually create the shot. It's not going to be one simple nuke setup and one single track. Is going to, because of the amount of movement in the scene, Music have to use various techniques to kind of reproject elements and transition between them. So that's going to be a lot of fun. It's something that he hasn't tackled as part of his series of matte painting courses. I think he's up to probably 8 of them now with us over the past couple of years. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And again, this is focusing, as Mike says, very much on that environment, which is great. But that second course that you have, that you mentioned, that's going to be cool, is actually going to be actually tackling objects within a similar scene, I guess you could say.
Yeah, we're going to be looking at blowing up a truck. Now, if you know Mad Max, you know they did most of their explosions in camera. As I said, this is not pretending to be a shot from the film. We just thought it'd be fun to do something of that ilk. So we don't have a real truck to blow up, and if we did, we wouldn't be doing a course on using Houdini to do it. We'd be using a course on TNT. So what we've decided to do is we've built a truck. So we've got a model that we totally got made ourselves, and it's not from the film, but is obviously of the style of a good old-fashioned Mad Max. So we got to understand, Mad Max is pretty close to my heart. I mean, this is, I'm an Australian.
You're an Australian.
This is our Star Wars. This is our Harry Potter. This is Australia's, you know, franchise. Anyway, so we did got an entire model made up. This is already done, and the idea is we're going to blow it up. And blowing crap up is something that has been really popular at FXPHD over the years.
Yes.
Liam is, for those of you that don't know, ex-ILM, has been teaching with us before, really popular guy, very good at doing this kind of stuff. We're going to do a match-moved shot in that same environment that we're talking about from the stuff that's in the digital matte painting / digital environment work. We'll do rigid body simulations of the explosion, debris. We thought we'd also have a missile coming in to blow it up, not that they were... you know, shoulder-mounted rockets in Mad Max, but what the heck, this is our movie, not theirs.
It's inspired by, right? The inspired by, sure. By, yeah.
And just do a really big-ass explosion. So this is going to be using, obviously, Houdini primarily, but also Nuke and other tools as we go along. We'll be providing the assets and the material for you to do this, of course, and I think Liam's going to have a ball doing this. I had a lot of fun in being kind of the designer of the Mad Max truck and going, oh, we should have these spiky things. Those of you that are Mad Max aficionados will realize that I've mixed my genres between the early Mad Max films and the late ones, but that was deliberate. But yeah, the truck is in of itself not as important as it is fun. It's rigging that truck and then doing a really good pyrotechnic explosion with it. Some stuff that he was very familiar at from his time at Lucasfilm when he was on films like Transformers, which I think John blew up a little bit of stuff in the course of this film.
Yeah, exactly. But yes, the Australians leading this course.
We love it.
And we do. I actually saw the premiere weekend with a couple Australians, which I learned of your country's love for the Mad Max series. So anyway, I think I love the idea of having the two courses kind of tied, similar within the same genre. Again, not doing the exact same shot, but very similar in nature, I guess you could say. And who knows, maybe there won't be more of this stuff in the future.
Yeah, so another course that we've doing back in the commercials realm is previs for commercials. Now, we've done previs before, but not specifically dedicated to commercials. And we thought that if we're going to be true to what we want to do here and really be serious about doing it for commercials and not just do it in name only, is we should properly have a commercials brief. And so we've just published a story over on FX Guide where we worked with Moon Unit, which is a company that does pictures. So I pretended to be you know, it's all. Everyone knew what was going on. I wasn't ripping anyone off, but we pretended to do a commercial, and we ran through that process creatively and got what I think is a spectacularly interesting pitch document that would award a director a notional commercial. And then from that very specific brief, we're now pre-vising the commercial. And I think this is important because it's easy to get carried away with doing previs and say, well, if you're doing this, it'd be like this. If you're doing this, it'd be like this. And you kind of lose that focus. You need a focus because, after all, previs is about trying to tell a story for a director, get the beats down and do stuff. But it's a 200-level course. So Matt, who's doing it, is actually... Matt Workman's a cinematographer as well as a previs guy. Very much working cinematographer. He got into previs from using it to work out to make his shoots easier so he doesn't have to turn up so early in the mornings. So in some of the classes, for example, a little later in the term, he'll be discussing, you know, how your previs cameras match real cameras on set for nodal pans versus on-set pans and, you know, the way that things actually work. This is going to be terrifically useful, I guess, even if you're doing previs for features, but But we have tried to make it very much like you'd present it to a client, and he'll be discussing some of those roles and how you deal with people in that commercials world, because he does it day in, day out. Matt's very enthusiastic, a really good teacher, and he's been building a ton of assets for his own world in previs. And I think if you're somebody that's trying to win work, you'll find it really instructive to both see that pitching process, but also winning work in terms of winning the commercials from a director who's been awarded the job already. In other words, being able to say to the director, hey, let's now you've got this job, previs it up for you so it'll work really well on set so that you can devote more time to making sure that things are the way you want them and not fussing around with stuff that is not right because we didn't have the right gear or we didn't understand how this was all going to work and it's the wrong particular apparatus. So a good example is it's all being shot with an Alexa. It's very specific that it's being shot with an Alexa. There's probably a little bit of high-speed work that won't be, but it's not just like any arbitrary camera. You know, it's like we said that the director wanted the Alexa as the primary camera and then a high-speed camera for some other stuff. And so that's what's being modeled. We get the right film backs and all that kind of stuff to make that work. So that's based in Maya. It's a 200-level course, but it's assuming you know Maya but not knowing previs. So it's not a 200-level previs per se. Does that make sense? It's
Yeah.
Yeah, you know Maya, but you don't know previs.
I would also say that, I mean, I've done stuff, taking a look at doing even rough previs within Flame. So, I mean, I think even if you don't necessarily know Maya, this might give you a spur to actually learn Maya. But, I mean, I would imagine that many of the techniques and possibilities you can do in actually mocking up shots, I've done it many times myself for my clients in Chicago. We had kind of a Tiananmen Square type standoff between a Talent and a 737. And there are tons of scale issues to consider, right? And so even taking that was a really simple example of doing that. And I would have loved to have a course like this to actually help me through that process and kind of approach it in even a better way than what I did before. And even Jeff will be touching on doing tests and so forth as part of his 101 course as well. So it all really fits in really nicely together.
I thought you were going to say then I had a standoff between me and the director. I was thinking, no. Really?
Well, I have before, but... That's a different story.
That's a different story. Yeah.
Well, and sticking with that commercials vein, we've got a really interesting course, New Commercials Finishing for Boutiques. And really happy to have Eduardo teaching the course for us this term now. Eduardo has helped us in the past with several shoots at FXPHE. Well, actually, he did the plate. It's a stag shop. He did the plate for the tornado shoot. And he's also helped us with that last chick process project. Where we actually have in our FXPHE showreel a couple shots from that course that we did. But he's developed a really nice business. He's a director at heart. That's his core job. But also being knowledgeable enough about visual effects and finishing to actually do some of that work himself. So he has a recent job that he's going to share with us for the Mexican Post Office. It was a job that he did several of the shots in the spot, but there were some that were more challenging, so he relied on Nuke Artists at a facility to do that. And so what he's going to work through is the workflow that he utilized doing that spot, where he actually got the rushes, did the edit, and then prepped the footage for finishing himself, utilizing Nuke Studio and so forth. So doing the shots himself, he followed the standard sensible procedure of basically prepping all the scenes as you would do, touching the ones and doing the work in some of them, but then sharing the rest of those scenes with the facility and doing that work outside of his business. So I think it's going to be a really interesting perspective on what you can do yourself, what you should farm out, and then how do you bring it all together, get that job ready to ship for your clients. He's going to use a lot of techniques. He's actually using Frame.io to actually share and collaborate as part of that process. So you're going to actually see some of that as part of the course, where it's a really great service. I don't know if you guys know about that. We've got some coverage of that over FX Guide in the past. But it's friends of ours, Emery Wells, the Diamonds, Jason Diamond, yeah. Is that, as well as others, create a really cool online review and approval and collaboration tool, I guess you could call it. That's really kind of built with us in mind, right? I mean, or that independent person in mind. So it's really cool. I think what's interesting about this is while it will share some parallels to what Jeff is doing, and you'll see that with the skill sets that Eduardo has, as well as the way he approaches the job, but it is very different because he doesn't have a large team of artists working with him. Budgets are a consideration in Mexico, right? It's a little bit of a different market than the Super Bowl stuff, right, that Jeff is working on. So I think it's really going to be a cool perspective on doing finishing, utilizing Nuke for smaller facilities.
Yeah, and he's not going to be doing things like showreels and other sort right. of odd bits and stuff that Jeff's doing. So that the courses aren't, it'd be wrong to think of one as being like a Flame version and the other one being a Nuke version. Jeff's is, you know, for starters, it's like a 100-level thing covering a wider range of stuff. So you're absolutely right. They should cover the similar stuff because hopefully what both of them are saying is universal in application. But yeah, they are quite...
This is very much a project-based course, I guess you would, with the entire project being this commercial. So again, it's going to be... I think it's going to be fun. And again, interesting perspective from his standpoint because he's built an incredibly successful business doing this work, both for TV commercials as well as television applications as well, or television shows in Mexico.
So as many of you would know from stuff we've published on FX Guide and also Inside Background Fundamentals, I've been involved with the Digital Human League. And you'll notice there's a picture of Digital Emily and the real actress Emily up on our page for the Mayer Foundations course. Now, this course isn't focused on just human faces or anything, but it's just one of the things that will be covered by Matt Leonard in this Mayer Foundation Look Dev course and lighting. So Matt is basically at in Canada. He works... at MPC, and he's been teaching for us for ages. He's really, really well known for the stuff he's done with us in Katana and Mayer and other things. Obviously, he knows Nuke and stuff. He's been doing stuff in this area for like a decade and even worked out here on Sydney with me with the stuff we did with Red Dwarf, which was great fun. So love Matt. The thing is, when we were putting this course together, we wanted to cover a range of lighting stuff, and so we thought it'd be interesting to include the asset, which is of course freely available from the Digital Human League stuff, which is great. But as I say, this course will be covering a ton of stuff from a wide range of things, including things like color science and how HDRs work, and getting the sort of basic machinations of a high-end pipeline working properly. He knows about this sort of stuff. As I say, he works with big companies, so making sure that you've got the gamut and gamma and ACES workflow and color IO and stuff all in the correct linear color pipeline is stuff that he'll be covering in the course. It's a really solid 200-level course, and I think you guys will enjoy it. Matt has always gone down very well with people, hasn't he, John, in terms of being a good and clear teacher.
Yeah, it certainly is, and that's his experience over the years, obviously, from where he's working. Obviously, his skill set is attractive to them, and he does. He just presents it in a very clear way, very great way to get an understanding of these various processes. And it was actually his idea to do these series of classes that we're calling Mayer Foundations. And if you look at the repertoire of courses we have at FXPhD, you'll see there's a wide variety of Mayer Foundations we've been building out term over term over term. After a couple term break, we really have to have them back continuing on with this, you know, the look, dev, and lighting.
Yeah. Now, we also have a graphic design in Flame course. This is, again, focused more at, I'm going to say commercials, but to be strictly true, it could be title sequence for a TV show or something that you're doing that's certainly non-feature film. It doesn't necessarily have to be a commercial. So Rob O'Neill worked with Autodesk and obviously the Flame guys for many, many years. He's a really talented guy. I've known him for like, I'm going to say 15 years. So it's a lot. We wanted to and always like to have a motion graphics emphasis based stuff. So this is doing everything from putting together things in Flame with expressions to be able to pull up a, like let's say you don't have a huge budget and you don't want to run it all through 3D and you have to get it turned around in a couple of days. These are some great ideas, some great tricks and tips to get stuff. There's sort of chromey, gloomy, glowy, glassy things, but there's also, you know, watercolors and typography and other aspects. So things that vary dramatically over the course of the course. It's not just one look, one particular thing. It's much more like tips and tricks for graphic designers to pull off good looks. And I find that's actually really, really helpful because as a somebody that's doing kind of graphic design, if somebody comes to you and says, look, we've only got a day or so to put together this title sequence for this award show or something that we're doing. Have you got any ideas? If you can dip into a bag of tricks and you go, yeah, I've got a cool bunch of ideas here that I could build on and modify, you're off to the races. And that's a really good way to start because I guess by kind of the nature of the beast that we're talking about, you don't have, you know, 6 months and a ton of people and and stuff. And if somebody comes to you and it's like, well, I want to get this thing and I want it to look organic and stuff, you go, okay, I've got a really good thing here. How about this? Oh, that'd be great. Let's do that. And you're away. So, I'd say a really old school bag of tricks, tips and tricks in the area of graphic design on Flame. And we're really enthusiastic to have that. And we'll be actually starting that with some classes in Flare. So if you, aren't in front of a Flame and you're at Flare, that is just as valid. And I think a lot of this stuff would also apply to Smoke, John.
Yeah, it certainly does. And I'll just, not to toot my own horn, so to speak, but I really feel that a lot of my success as an artist on Flame doing commercials, as you mentioned early on, was because of my ability to actually do exactly what you're saying. You have a client, and there's a rush job, you've got a ship, but oh my God, we forgot to do something, or we forgot this graphic, or we need to create this graphic, or something changed in the edit that we need to cover. I mean, having that graphic design tool set as a resource that you can bring to your clients is incredibly useful when you're working on TV commercials in Flame or any other product, but especially Flame, because again, deadlines are tight. You actually do things really quickly in Flame, especially with some of the graphic stuff and texture stuff that they've added in the last couple of releases. So this is going to be a lot of fun course. And it's a bit different from the courses we've been doing in the past related to Flame, where we've really much focused on a lot of compositing and visual effects-based tasks.
Yeah, I mean, if you were somebody that was suddenly in a position that, I don't know, it could be a major corporate for that matter, you know, something that is going to be dropped on you. And I've got to say, for many Flame artists, that is the case. Like, it's almost like we need something really quick, we'll throw it in Flame and we'll have turned around quickly. You don't have a lot of time to experiment, and you actually sort of need, I think, regular doses of this kind of stuff to have in your bag of tricks. Yeah. Because if you've got a few things, you can adapt them and do things and mock things up pretty quickly for people, and that impresses the bajillions of our clients. I mean, really, you just say like, well, we could do some stuff like this, and let me just change this thing here, and whack, and it's like, oh, okay, oh, yeah, okay, that's the sort of thing we're after, make it our colors, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, great, I'll come back tomorrow, thanks. God, you're saving my life, thanks, man, bye, okay, bye. And you're like, okay, let's get going.
Well said.
So, yeah.
Well said.
And the fact that it's using expressions and it's using some of the newer techniques, I'm really looking forward to it. So on the current version of the Flame software and stuff, as John said, that has changed. It's been updated. There are some tricks in there that are what you might call old school, but there are a lot of them just new tricks and things that you can now do that are really viable. So I think that'll be great. I really like the Japanese watercolor stuff. I'm really looking forward to that. And he's also got, like, for example, animating clouds to produce a logo or a symbol or whatever. So that's the kind of stuff. It's a good range of stuff from what you might call logos to reveals to final pieces.
Yeah, it'll be great. Well, speaking of bag of tricks, this next course was actually pitched to us by Philip Maddock, and that's 3D Equalizer Tricks of the Trade. Now, Philip has taught several 3D Equalizer courses for us in the past, an introductory level course, 3DE 101, as well as a 200 level course as well. But as we've talked about in the past regarding our tracking courses, there's a big green button in Synthize. You hit it, lo and behold, your track is done, good to go. That is not the case.
That was easy, John. But wait, what if it doesn't work?
Not the case at all. Yeah, sometimes it works. Sometimes you're paying your job. It's good enough. But the real trick of being a good 3D tracker is actually knowing how to deal with things when good tracks go bad, I like to say. It's like it's knowing how to solve problems. It's having that experience of running into something in the past and how almost, is it the right way to say, trick the software or guide the software might be a better way of doing it, saying it, to get the job done. And so the idea behind this is actually showing you a bunch of really cool tips and tricks that Philip has developed over the years he's willing to share with you guys, which is brilliant, in order to get the job done. I mean, it can be anything from scripting to actually changing the solver to get a different track, to working with lens distortion, which is, of course, a critical aspect of getting good tracks you can actually comp into. You can't comp into a shot with lots of lens distortion, or it's hard to do. So things like that. So I think this is going to be really brilliant, and again, a great building upon the courses he did for us in the past. So if you haven't looked into 3D Equalizer recently, I think it really deserves a new look. They've actually really recently introduced a new pricing structure, so almost a rental model where you can pay for it more affordably per month, like a lot of the other applications that are around as well. So check this course out if you're interested at all in 3D tracking. This is the application that major film studios go to when they really need to get the job done. I mean, in fact, the tracking shot that's being done for the matte painting course is actually being done in 3D Equalizer as well by Benoit. So
3D Equalizer is a very serious piece of 3D tracking software. Like, it has a lot of depth.
It doesn't have a green button.
No, but I'm saying, like, it's the go-to place for the shot that isn't the one that automatically gets tracked by whatever is the, you know, sort of... Because, yeah, there are obviously simple trackers in everything, right?
Yeah,
like there's one After flame Effects. Or something. It's not... But this, obviously, when they fail, then you go to something like 3D Equalizer, and the whole point of it is you need to have those... I mean, basically, they're roadblocks for other trackers. You have to work out how to get around the roadblocks or plow through them.
Yeah.
If they weren't there, then you wouldn't be doing them in 3D Equalizer. You'd probably just do them in, as you say, After Effects or wherever you're putting the stuff together.
The software has those additional tools that you need to get the job done. So it's learning those.
I think this is a really good segue, though, to discuss the VPN software, because I've already mentioned the fact that we'll be having a massive in the VPN. Of course, we have things like Nuke and stuff. We've had these for some time. But do you want to discuss, because obviously Equalizer is a classic case of a great piece of software that's available on the VPN. It has a whole lot of stuff available in the VPN. Do you want to discuss
that? Yeah, and I just want to also give a shout out to folks at 3D Equalizer, because they've been really helpful with us getting that available on our VPN and making it available to you guys. They actually feel it's really important to have it available for you, as do all the manufacturers. In fact, they think it's actually in a critical part of the process to allow you to follow along with the courses. Don't have to worry about format resolutions or lack of tools or anything like that in order to get the job done. If you're a member, head on over to the knowledge base. That's under the resource tab, and you can see the full list of software. For those of you who aren't members, we have software from, Mike mentioned, from the Foundry, things like Hero, Katana, Modo, Nuke, things like that. We have Maya, Mudbox from Autodesk, and we have Gollum Crowd. Cinema 4D is available as well, V-Ray, Ocula, more. I mean, basically the idea behind it is as many software packages as we can that support network licensing we'll have on the site. And what happens, if you haven't been a member of FXPHD before, is basically you download some software. It's called OpenVPN. It creates a very secure connection between your computer and ours, no one else, that allows you to launch an application, contact the license server that's running on our server, giving you permission to run the software. And again, these are the full versions. These are not the watermarked, limited EDU versions. These will let you get this job done to build a shot for your reel. Not just learn it, but build a shot for your reel. The only thing you can't do is you can't make money utilizing the software, because, well, that wouldn't be fair.
Yeah. But what a difference not having watermarks. What a difference having, you know, full versions that can save properly, that are not limited. I mean, you know, it is our hope, of course, that there are two reasons that you'd want to use the VPN. One, that you'd use it to learn, and that's obviously the primary one. But secondly, that you would then see that you could use it and it was working well, and you'd be able to say, hey, guys, this is something we haven't done, but I know how to use it. We could put this on a job, and you know, obviously then the company would use it, or you would buy it if you were your own. But it's so much easier to be in that position when you've learnt it, you know, beforehand, not when the job's on. I mean, no one wants to learn software as the job's crunching on top of them. So yeah, that's the way it works. Everybody therefore is very happy to work with us. We just ask you guys to respect that thing about not using it on a commercial work, because frankly, I was like, I mean, we sometimes quote 20. I think it's actually like $30,000 worth of free VPN stuff that you can get in a term, and that runs over. And John was saying it works really, really well. You know, it's been something that I think we've been really proud to offer members. And I say, I think earlier, it works well, I think, sometimes on those programs that are maybe less obvious. Like, a lot of people have things like Maya or Nuke. But, you know, you may not have, I don't know, Mari, or you may not have, you know,
Massive.
Whatever that thing is.
Massive, I think, is a great example of that, yeah. And even 3D Equalizer to a lesser extent because of its previous cost point of entry, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, it really helps learn and, again, build shots for your reel. People who are recruiting at various facilities actually like seeing FXPHD material on the reels. What they like about it is the shots are really very, very different from one another. It's the style of teaching that we do at FX PhD. It's not a recipe for creating a lens flare that looks the same, so you get like 20 or 30 people with the same shot. We've heard this, and Mike, you've talked to them, I think, more recently, but
yep.
about getting shots. It's the same footage, but vastly different look, vastly different interpretation, and that's really cool, and frankly, I say a testament to your guys' creativity, our members.
Yeah, the recruiters love it. I mean, you'd think that they would be like, this is a shot that's... from training material, but it's not like that at all. In fact, they're like, okay, this is great. This is showing that you're self-motivated. You're getting out and there learning stuff. And I can see what you've done with this, which may be, vastly superior to what somebody else has done with it, and shows that you've got some real understanding of this footage. It's actually a really helpful thing. There are occasions at companies, I know Pixar used to do it at one stage, where they'd give new recruits the same stuff and ask them to go animate something with it to see what people would do with it, because having the same starting point, knowing what the assets are going in, it's a very opening opportunity to allow you to sort of show what you can do. So, yeah, if you get a shot, like in the digital matte painting, digital desert apocalypse thing, it's probably going to look different than the one that Ludo does, but that's a good thing. Now, you can follow along as much as you want. We're not going to, hold back stuff. We're going to give you the assets to blow up the truck or whatever it is. But, you'll come up with your own interpretation, and that's great for your reel.
And one other thing to touch on that just really quickly, I just want to point out that while that is a shot with a 3D camera move and so forth, obviously, we hope that if you're interested, that you would actually go and try and track that shot yourself. We don't have a specific class about doing that tracking, but for a class like that, we do give out the camera track along with that, so you can use that as a starting point without having to do that as well. So along with many of the classes come not just the footage, but some of the supporting files as well as tracks and things like that. For the mix. So if you're not comfortable tracking, or you're in a role where you don't need to do that, you'll still be able to actually work on that matte painting and end up with something nice.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. I think that actually rounds out, doesn't it, our new courses this term?
It does as well. Okay. And one thing I just want to mention also before the end of the podcast, for those of you who are new and are on the Twitterverse, check out our Twitter feed, which is at FXPHD. There's a little status line at the top of the forums as well, where it gets our most recent tweet, but we send out information on that account whenever there's something new, some news or the site, if God forbid the site goes down. I mean, I guess there are worse things in the world, unless you really want to learn
that. There's nothing else worse in the world.
But you know what?
That's as bad as it gets.
But yes, for my point, that is as bad as it gets. But anyway, things like that to keep you informed of stuff going on. It's a great way to keep informed. This podcast is also a very good way to keep informed. If this is the first time you're listening to it, this changes from the first week to actually more discussion about what's going on at FXPhD under the hood, behind the scenes, the occasional rat hole about various things as well, just to kind of help you guys.
Normally tech rat holes.
Yes.
Normally tech.
Normally. Yes, very much. Yeah, we really do try to keep it on focus. While it is informal, yeah. We do try and keep it on focus, because nothing's more annoying than being on a podcast where they go into a completely unrelated rat hole.
Or rather, it's excludingly kind of like self,
yes.
You have in jokey.
Yes.
Because we figured is that with PhD, you wanted that experience of being on campus, and an on-campus experience is you get to talk to people and find out a bit what's going on behind the scenes. And so that's what this is. This is the behind the scenes kind of chat of what's happening. You get a bit more of a perspective on stuff. And we know there are a bunch of you guys that that listen to it regularly, because you complain when we skip them, and rightly so. We do, I think, do this one normally very regularly, last term being an exception. So yeah, keep an eye out for it.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Are you using any of the other podcast apps these days, like Overcast or whatever it is?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, I love him. I read his blog all the time. So very much a fan of that app.
Yeah, so...
I was quite a beta tester, but I was pretty close to being a beta tester.
Uh-huh. So if you guys have got any questions you'd like us to discuss, like, something that you want to do, and or you want to give us information on courses coming up or anything like that, just drop us a line. In the forums is probably the best way to do that. But of course, on Twitter and stuff as well. You get priority in the forums, because occasionally people ask me stuff and I'm like, well, are you a member of PhD? Because if you are, I'll happily do anything you want. But if you're just bugging me for stuff, I'm going to have to prioritize some other things and get back to it. So yeah, if you can... And if you also are going to SIDGRAPH, we're going to be going to SIDGRAPH in LA coming at the beginning of August, about the 8th and 9th. If you see us and we don't have a camera pointed at us, and we don't have a microphone recording at the instant that we're doing it, please walk up and say hi. People have walked up and said hi while we're recording. That was slightly awkward. But you'll see us walking around the place. And oftentimes you'll say, oh, I saw you at FMX or I saw you at SIDGRAPH. I didn't want to interrupt you and say hello. It's like, say hello.
Yeah.
We're just like you. We would love to chat. And sometimes we can't chat for very long if we're rushing to the next thing. But if we're in the queue for the real-time live or whatever it is, we'd like nothing better than to chat with you guys and stuff. And we have done that at every SIDGRAPH we've been to, which has been quite a few. So, yeah.
And we'll probably have a meetup as well, some informal place right around the corner, probably the Yard House or something like that, at a appropriate time that is not in conflict with something major. So we'll post details of that in the FXPHD forums for sure.
Yeah, and if you come to our meetup, we're buying at the bar.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
All right.
Well, see you guys in the forums.
Yeah, thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week, I promise. Bye.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FX PhD.